All right, everyone, say good morning. So today's daf is Tzadik Ches. We are picking up on Tzadik Zayin Amud Beis, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom. So just first of all, Shir today is sponsored by Jerry and Abby Applebaum in memory of Abby's uncle, Joseph Friedman, Yosef Chaim Zichron Levrach. We hope that on the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah. So remember, we're picking up over here in the middle of the Machlokes in Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon. So remember, again, in the Mishnah, so Rabbi Shimon said that once a woman went ahead and, let's say, sold off part of her ksuva, right, or collateralized part of her ksuva, did something to part of her ksuva, she loses the ability to collect mizonos. Versus the Rabbanon said, no, that even if she sold part of her ksuva, halach l'maaseh, she still has the ability to collect mizonos. So the Gemara wanted to suggest that maybe the machlokes, you know, Shimon and the Rabbanon, was miktsas kesef kikol kesef, or miktsas kesef lo kikol kesef. The idea is that do we say if part of the money is remaining in the ksuva, it's as if all of the money is remaining in the ksuva, and therefore, again, she's still entitled to mizonos. So do we say, no, if part of the ksuva is deficient, meaning part of the monies are no longer there, then l'maaseh, she's lost mizonos. That's the Gemara wanted to suggest that the machlokes was. But then the Gemara says, v'ha ipcha shamin alohu, but Rabbi says, so we wanted to suggest yesterday that Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that miktsas kesef lo kikol kesef, and the Rabbanan say miktsas kesef kikol kesef, but yet the Gemara says, but we learned, or we seem to have learned, that they each subscribe to the opposite opinions. Ha ipcha shamin alohu, desanyo, because we learned. So the Kohen Gadol has to marry, this passage parish, Kohen Gadol has to marry a besula, prat le bogeres, shekalu besula de Rabbi Meir. So we'll say this comes to exclude a bogeres, because a bogeres, again, her besulim have already begun to disappear. Now remember, we spoke about this earlier in the Masechta. The idea is that as a girl gets older, her besulim are less pronounced than when she is younger. So the Gemara says, hasam bekrai pligi. There the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Lazar. I'm sorry, excuse me. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Machshirin, Rabbi Bogeres. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, say that no, a Bogeres is kosher. Now, both saying, now, kosher to marry the Kohen Gadol. Now, what the Gemara is assuming that means is like this, that Rabbi Shimon holds that even part of the Besulim is enough. You don't need the entirety of the Besulim to be intact. Part of the Besulim is enough, which seems to indicate that Rabbi Shimon holds that even part of something is counted like the whole, which contradicts what we just said before, because the Maisa, we just wanted to suggest that Rabbi Shimon holds that part of something does not count as the whole. So this seems to be the Machlo, so Rabbi Shimon seems to be contradicting himself, to which the Gemara says, no, you can't bring a Raya from Besula. Why? Hasam bekrai pligi. Because by the Kohen Gadol and the Besula, they actually have a fundamental Machlokes regarding Besulim. What's the machlokes? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir Savar, Besula. Rabbi Meir says, had the pasuk just said Besula, afilu miktsas Besulim, it would have told us that a girl who's a Besula is kosher to the Kohen Gadol, even if her full Besulim are not intact, which Rabbi Meir remembers for our purposes means that she is a Bogeres. Besuleha. Therefore, the pasuk doesn't just say besula. Rather, from the word besulaha, I would learn that it requires the entirety of the besulim to be intact. Bivsulaha, but I will say, interestingly enough, the Torah doesn't just say bisulaha, but it says bivsula. So remember, again, I will say, there's a progression. So again, Rabbi Meir would say, had it just said besula, had it just said the besula has to marry Kohen Gadol, I would have said besula means any besula, even if she doesn't have her full besulim intact. Therefore, it says bisulaha, she must have her besulim, i.e. the besulim in their entirety must be intact. But it doesn't just say bisulaha. Instead, what does it say? Bifsulaha. What does that mean? Kedarka inshallah kedarka lo. That's also the only thing that renders her unfit for a Kohen Gadol is if she had be a kedarka. If she had be a shalom kedarka, that would not render her unfit for the Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Elazar b'Shem Sari. Rabbi Elazar b'Shem on the other hand hold. Bisula shleima mashma. The word besula indicates to us, shlema, that she's a complete besula. Bisuleha, her besulim, afilu mitzas besulim, teaches us that no, even if part of the besulim are intact, that's enough. Top of tzad nechess. Bivsuleha, why did the pasuk say bivsuleha? Sheyei kol bisuleha kayamin. All of her besulim must be intact, namely, bein kidarka, bein shelo kidarka, meaning she's not permitted to have had bia kidarka, bia shelo kidarka, in order to be able to marry the Kohen Gadol. So therefore the Gemara is suggesting that, remember, we wanted to bring up this case of Besula, as a contradiction to the position of Rabbi Shimon, because it appeared over here that Rabbi Shimon was saying that part of the Besulim is good enough like the whole Besulim, and yet that contradicts what he said before by Ksuva, because by Ksuva indicates that part of the Ksuva is not like the whole Ksuva, and therefore again, if she, let's say she sold off part of the Ksuva, she's no longer entitled to Mizonos. Kamashon says the Gemara that it's two different cases. In the case of the Besula by the Kohen Gadol, they're arguing over how to interpret a Pasuk. Therefore, it does not go ahead and pose any level of contradiction. Does not pose any level of contradiction to the case of Ksuva. The Gemara tells a story. Hahi Issa, there was a particular woman, the Tafsa Kasa de Kasba Biksuvasa. She seized a silver cup from the estate of the her husband in order to go ahead and satisfy her Ksuva. Katava Mizoni. So I'll say after she sees the cup, Narashi points out over here, Katava Mizone, the Tafsa Kasa de Kaspa, bless you. Bahaya Boshir Ksuvasa. And Bosi, here's what's interesting, is that apparently the cup did not have the Shir Kisuva. This is important. So the, let's say, for argument's sake, the Kisuva was 1,000 zuz, the cup was worth 500 zuz. Okay? So what happened? Katava Mizone. Then she also wanted Mizono. So Rabbi says, here's a classic case that we saw in the Mishnah, because what's happened over here? She's effectively collected some part of the Ksuva. So even though she's collected some part of the Ksuva, she's still what? She still wants her Mizonos. So what happens? Asay the Kamei de Rava. So she came before Rava. Amar lehu liyasmi, Rava said to the orphans, Zil havu la Mizonos. Go ahead and give her Mizonos. Let's thank you. Less the chash laha the Rabbi Shimon, the amar lo amrino and miktas kesef kichol kesef. So Rava instructed the Yisomim to go ahead and pay Rabbi Shimon So Rava instructed the Yisomim to give the woman Mizonos. Why? Because he said no one holds like Rabbi Shimon. Because remember, what did Rabbi Shimon say? The amar lo amrino and miktas kesef kichol kesef. That Rabbi Shimon is the one who says that we do not say part of the ksuva is like having the entire ksuva intact. So both I see here you have Rava saying that even if the woman collected part of her ksuva, she is still what? She is still entitled to mizonos until the point in time that she collects the ksuva in its entirety. Shalach li Rava berei de Rava, shalach li Rabba berei de Rava le Rav Yosef. So Rabba, the son of Rava, sent the following question to Rav Yosef. Mocheres shalo bebeznin. Tzricha shavua or ain't tzricha shavua? So we'll say, so first, just so you know, that's how we paskin. Just like we pass like the Rabbanon in the Mishnah. Namely, even if a woman collected some part of her ksuva already, she is still entitled to mizonos. So the idea, interesting enough, with mizonos is, as long as there is some part of her ksuva that is still uncollected, lemaisa, again, she is permitted to continue to collect mizonos. So he paskin like the Rabbanon, not like Rabbi Shimon. Okay, now the Gemara says something else. What about the following case? Mocher shelo bebezdin. Remember, both said, and this is interesting because all of our halachas are building on each other. So remember, we established already yesterday's daf, that's what? That a woman could sell off property for the sake of satisfying a ksuva debt, for the sake of satisfying ksuva, even without the permission of Beis Din. So let's say she went ahead and she sold outside of Beis Din. Does she require a shavua? Does she require an oath? Now, what would she be taking an oath on? Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Tzricha shavua shelo gavsa yoser, that she did not collect any additional amounts. I'm saying that what this means is the following. Now, let's say she sells off a piece of property. So does she have to take a shvua after she sells that property that she didn't collect more than she was entitled to? Meaning, Rabbi would say, so real estate is one of those things where there's not necessarily an established market value. There's a market range, but sometimes people pay a premium for different things because it has certain meaning for them, because they want a particular location. So the Gemara asks a very interesting question. So let's say her ksuva is worth 1,000 zuz. She sells off a piece of land that is technically appraised at 1,000 zuz, but yet it's possible she sold it for more. So do we make her take a shvua to the Yisomim that she only got 1,000 zuz for it? Do we make her take that shvua or not? So the Gemara says, before you ask about shvua, let's ask about something else. Is there an obligation to make an announcement? The Rabbos say the halacha is that normally before you go ahead and sell a state property, Yisom's property, there has to be achraz. Achraz means an announcement, that you announce the sale for 30 days. And I will say, now why do you do that? Because you want to ensure that the estate Yisom get the best price possible. Because if you just go ahead and put it on the market and sell it immediately, who's going to know about it? So before you ask about whether or not it's Shavua, why don't you first ask, is there an obligation to be machrus? Is there an obligation to announce the sale of this property? So the Gemara says, Amar Lei, he said to him, Achraz lo kamei boyeli. No, I don't have a question about announcing it. I'll tell you why. Amar Abzeira, Amar Anachmin, Amana Sheshama Liatzma, if a Sheshama Liatzma, I should say, that if a widow appraised land for herself. Now, we'll see what that means is if you look at Rashi, Sheshama Liatzma, Lakhasadeh Haysum Liatzma, Bishumas Ksubasa. So let's say you have a woman, Rabbi Osei, who sees the piece of property for herself. She's not selling it now. She's seizing it for her own ownership. Her ksuva is 5,000 zoz, give me these 1,000 zoz. She seizes a piece of property for herself for 1,000 zoz. What's that halacha? Lo asasav lo klum. Her actions are absolutely meaningless. Rashi says, Ve'imratzu hayisomim lahagbos ma'os la'achar zman chozim not lenosa. Therefore, if the yisomim decide, we don't want to give you land, we'll give you money. We'll give you money, then the Yisroelim have every right to do so. So the Gemara says, hey, Chidami, what's the case? If she announced the sale, meaning if she publicized the sale beforehand, right, I'm sorry, I should say, if she announced it beforehand, then why ultimately are actions meaningless? Elalav delo achros. Rather, the case must be what? The case must be where there was no prior announcement. And it's only for her own seizure that ultimately, again, the announcement is meaningless. Here's what's interesting. The only time this case that the Bryce is talking about is a case where she's seizing the land and keeping it for herself. But yet, again, we can infer from that if she were to sell the land to someone else, even without hachraza, even without any announcement, masha asasa asasa, what she's done is good. So what do you see from here? You see from here that when an amana sells off property in order to go ahead and satisfy her ksuva debt, that lamaisa, she does not have, there is no prior announcement that is necessary. To which the Gemara says, no, the olam da achros. In reality, the case over here is where the sale was announced. Uda amrila, man sham lech. But rather, in this case over here, the Yisomim are able to say to her, who went ahead and appraised it for you? Now look at Rashi, what does that mean? Man sham leich, mimi kabalt nechirazu. Who entitled you to take this piece of property? Lo mi beiznin, v'lo mi Yisomim, lefichach lo yotzai karka mirashus ha-Yisomim, aval heicha deshamta lachrini, nafak mirashus ha-Yarshim, shari nasla chacham mirashus l'mkabos. Now this is very interesting, and we're going to get to this distinction. Apparently, what the Gemara is highlighting over here is that a woman has the ability to seize property to sell it to someone else, but she doesn't have the ability to seize property and to keep it for herself. Now, we're going to further define that idea, but for our purposes, what is coming out over here is that when she goes ahead and seizes a piece of property to sell it to someone else, hachraza, prior announcement, meaning the normal 30-day announcing period, is not necessary for her. There was a particular situation like this, of a particular man, Davkidu be kista de kasirashi says, mispo, fodder. So he goes ahead, and there was a particular individual, animal feed. So what happened? The Yisumim went ahead and deposited with him their animal feed. Azal shama lenafshe ba'arba me'ezuzin. I must say, now, unbeknownst to the Yarshim, or maybe, I don't know, maybe they did know, maybe they didn't know, their father owed this particular individual 400 zuz. So what happened? The custodian goes ahead and evaluates the price of the animal fodder, and sure enough, what does it turn out to be? Turns out that it's 400 zuz. So what happens? Azal shama lenafshe ba'arba me'ezuzin. Iyaker kam b'shis mea. Then what happened? The price of animal fodder, of animal feed, went up, and now that same amount was worth 600 zuz. Also, the kame de Rabbi Ami. So the Yisomim came up for Rabbi Ami. Amar lei man sham loch. Rabbi Ami said to the guy, who allowed you, literally, who evaluated this for you, meaning who allowed you to seize it? The Hilchasa and the Halacha is, so also Rabbi Ami ruled that he was not permitted to go ahead and seize that item in satisfaction of the debt owed him by the father. The Hilchasa, Rabbi Ami said, what is bottom line? Hilchasa, Tzricha Shavuot. All this whole conversation began because the Gemara asked a very simple question, which is, if she sells property, which she is entitled to do, if she sells property, does she need to take a Shavuot, an oath to the Yisomim, that she did not collect more than what she was entitled to? To which the Gemara paskins, yes. She must go ahead and take a Shavuot. To them, now obviously, that Shavuot is only necessary if they mandate it. If they waive it because they go ahead and believe her, that's certainly their prerogative. But assuming they're not waiving the Shavuot, she requires a Shavuot after selling the property. The Einot Tzricha Hachraza. But ultimately, again, there is no obligation to announce the sale of the property 30 days prior to the sale.
What happens if the property value changes? She takes 400 zuz worth and then sells it to somebody else who now is willing to pay. At the time she took it, it was 400 zuz. At the time she sells it, it's now 600.
Oh, so she has to get back to the 200.
Why? And if it goes down in value?
Oh, so that's, we're going to...
Does it go at the time you bought it?
Next Mishnah. So no, Dak, your first case is the easy one. The first case of where it turns out that it was 400 zuz, but she sells it for 600. So that's exactly what the Gemara seems to be indicating with the Shavuot. The whole point of the Shavuot is, look, you're entitled to X. Remember, she's entitled to an exact, we'll call it the zuz amount. Therefore, she's not permitted to collect at the extent of the Yisomim more zuz, even though she's getting more zuz from the same piece of property. That money's not hers. Her claim against the estate is for, to use your example, 400 zuz. That's her claim. Therefore, any additional monies automatically go back to the Yisomim.
Even if it's 10 years later, the value goes up. At what point?
Well, 10 years later, she sold it.
She held on to it for a few years.
No. Remember, that she doesn't have the right to do, because remember, again, then you're talking about seizing property. That's what the Gemara was saying. We're going to get into this sugya. But the notion that she's permitted to seize property to sell it off. Seizing property to keep it is a different set of halachas, which we'll see. There are circumstances when she could do that. Right, so there are circumstances where she can do that, but here the Gemara is automatically assuming that the license here is to seize and sell. And therefore, again, she's entitled to the monies that she's entitled to. Any additional monies will automatically go back to the Yisomim, says the Mishnah. But now we're going to actually talk about this case of appreciation of the asset or depreciation of the asset. Says the Mishnah, Amana Shaisa Ksuvasa Masayim, if you have an Amana who had a Ksuv worth 200 Zuz, Umachra, listen to this, Umachra shava mana b'masayim. She's a good business lady. So what does she do? She takes a piece of land that was worth 100 zuz and she sold it for 200. Oh, shava masayim mana. Or she took a piece of land that was worth 200 zuz and she sold it for 100. So we'll say, what's talacha? Niskablo ksuvasa. So the Mishnah paskins, in both of these cases, she has received her ksuva. In other words, Rabbi Osai, in case number one, that's obvious, because in case number one, she went ahead and she has 200 zuz. Right? At the end of the day, she collected 200 zuz, so therefore ksuva is done. The interesting part is if she took a piece of land worth 200 zuz and apparently undersold it for 100 zuz, that's her problem. Right? That's her problem. And now ultimately, again, her ksuva debt is satisfied by the estate. Again, we'll have to obviously define these cases. Haisa ksuvasa mana, umachra shava mana v'dina, b'mana. Listen to this. Her ksuva was 100 zuz, and what did she do? She took a piece of property that was worth a mana and a dina. So we'll say, her ksuva is, just to keep this easy, so her ksuva is worth 100 mana, and she goes ahead, right? Give one, what were you saying? Did I skip
over? Both cases.
No, I'm now in the next case. Haisa ksuva samana. If her ksuva was 100, umachra shava mana bedinar bemana. But what did she do? She took a piece of land that was worth a mana and a dinar. So just to keep this easy. So her ksuva was worth 100 mana. And then let's say she went ahead and she took a piece of property that was worth 101 mana. 101 mana. I mean, literally 100 mana and a dinar, right? Which is just a little bit more. But she sold it for a mana. So apparently she undersold a particular piece of property just by relatively negligible amount, so that it was equal to the amount of her ksuva. The halacha is mikra batal. Her sale is batal. And why is your sale bottle? Look at Rashi. Mechre bottle. Sha'osa dinar ein lo reshus limkar. Nimtza shekola mecher ta'o shari bebas achas ha'isa. Now listen to this. Because the Mishnah is saying she doesn't have a claim against that extra dinar of property. Remember, her claim against property is limited to what? Is limited to the actual value of the ksuva, 100 mana. Therefore, if she sells off a piece of property that is more expensive than the actual value for ksuva, she has no rights in that property. If she has no rights in that property, therefore, again, the entire sale is bottle.
Even if she gives the change back.
Correct. Next line. Afilu hi omeres, achzer dinar liyarshin. Even if she says, look, I'm not trying to profit off this. I'll give you back the money. I only want what I'm entitled to. Nevertheless, lemaisa, the sale is bottle. So the nevertheless, michra bottle. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no. The sale is a valid sale. Atsha teheisham kideisha tishayir besoda bas tisha kabin ubegina bas chatzi kav ukediv Rabbi Akiva bas rova. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says something very interesting. The sale is good. Until when? Until there is literally, he says, until there's an additional 9 kav of property left, or in a garden, a half a kav, or according to Rabbi Akiva, a quarter of a kav. Now, what is this talking about? Look at Rashi. Ad sheyehe. Rashi says, first of all, the olam michra kayim. Rashi says, v'hi tachzir es adinar liyarshim, demahef sidasan. So Rabbi Shimon says, no, listen. If she sells the piece of property that was worth a mana and a dinar, so she gives back the extra dinar to the yarshim, the sale is still kayim. Rashi says, ad sheyehe, ba'ona kide she'ilu lo haisa no hayim mishtayir b'sod de bastisha kabin, o ha'ona asma tisha kabin, v'hu adin im nishra li yisomim sham levat ha'ona tes kabin, v'cheven de leish li yisomim kark Hashem Kishir Sada Yomula in Salim Kar Karka Rai Lanu. I was supposed to listen to this. Let me tell you this outside because we'll come back to this in the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says like this. When is the only time that will say that if she took a mana and a dinar worth of property and sold it off, that her sale is bottle? That's only if the Yisomim don't own any additional property. And we'll see why this is. But if the Yisomim own additional property, it has to be some significant amount of additional property. For example, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says the significant sheer property is 9 kavin, or in a garden, half a kav, or according to Rabbi Akiva, a quarter of a kav. The idea is if they own additional properties, then Lemaisa, she has the ability to simply return the extra dinar and the sale of the property for Ksuva will still stand. Now we'll see in the Gemara what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's logic is in just a little bit. What Rabbi Shimon Gamliel seems to say is that Lamaisa, if they did not own any additional properties, then that's halacha Lamaisa when the sale would be bottle. But if they have additional properties, her sale is kayim, stands, even though what? She sold off more than technically speaking she was entitled to. So the Gemara goes weiter. Haisa ksuva sa'arba meozuz, if her ksuva is 400 zuz, umachra la zebemana, ula zebemana, ula acharon yofe mana vidinar bemana, shal acharon batal fashal kula mechran kain. So let's listen to this. Let's say she has a ksuva 400 zuz, and for argument's sake, the husband doesn't have a piece of property that's worth 400 zuz. So what does she do? She seizes four parcels. She seizes four parcels that are each worth 100 zuz. They're each worth 100 zuz. I should say differently. She goes ahead and she seizes three parcels. Sells off the first one for 100, second one for 100, third one for 100, good. And the last one was worth a mana and a dinar. Right? The last one was worth more than 100 zuz. But yet, she went ahead and only sold it for a mana. So she undersold it. What's the halacha? Sha'achram batal v'shakula machran kayim. So we'll say the last transaction is batal, but all of the previous ones are good. Now, what's the chiddush? What's the novelty in that ruling? See, I might have thought that since all of these sales are being done to satisfy the same ksuva, perhaps they're all linked. And therefore, again, if one is batal, all are batal. Kamashmalo, no. Kamashmalo, that only the one that is an undersale is batal, but the other three that were proper sales will stand. Says the Gemara.
Will she get whatever in another sale?
I'm sorry?
Will she get the difference in another sale? I mean, if she sold 100, 200, 300.
Yeah.
She still has a balance of 100 owed to her.
Correct.
But the 101 was voided out.
Correct. So she's still entitled to that 100%. Right. She's not forfeiting her entitlement. It's just that sale is bottle. So says the Gemara, Maishna Shava Masai. So we'll say now, these are very interesting cases. Maishna Shava Masai Memana Da Armila At Afsarata. But remember, so first case of the Mishnah was, she goes ahead, actually second case of the Mishnah, she takes a piece of property that was sold, that was worth 200 zuz, and she sold it for 100. So what did the Mishnah Paskin? Mishnah Paskin, she's done. She's done, right? Meaning, you took a piece of property, you made a big mistake in your sale, you have to suffer the consequences of your mistake.
Isn't there
hachraza? No, we just got finished saying there's no hachraza.
Okay.
Good, thank you. No. Right, no. That's, and so that now you understand, by the way, why the Gemara actually brought this before this Mishnah. Because remember, again, why could a case like this happen where there is such a gross undersell of the property? Because there is no hachraza. Because there is no hachraza.
Yeah, so if there are yitumim involved.
No, remember, the Gemara paskin beforehand that there is no, an amana is not obligated to be machrez the property before she goes ahead and sells it off. Right, that's, remember, I will say that was right before the Mishnah, v'hilchasa tzricha shivua, v'ina tzricha hachraza. So there's no case, which is exactly why this kind of stuff happens. So the Gemara says like this, she took a 200 zuz piece of property, told Gemara piece of property, she sold it for 100, she's done. She's done, meaning the estate has given her an asset worth 200 zuz, she went out, or 200 mana, she went ahead and she made a mistake in her sale, she suffers the mistake. The Gemara says, the amri la, because the Yisong Kuseder, at Afsarata, you messed yourself over. You caused yourself a loss. Don't come back to us. So the Gemara says, well, if using that logic, shava emana b'masayim namitema, ana arvachna. So we'll say, if that's the case, then why can't we say the following? In the case where she goes out and takes a 100 piece of property, and what? Sells it for 200, she should be able to say what? I profited. Now we'll say, what does that mean, I profited? You guys still owe me what? Another 100. Because I only seized an asset that was worth 100 zuz from the estate. The fact that I'm a shrewd lady, that's my own shrewdness. You still own my shrewdkeit, right? You still owe me another 100 zuz.
For 200 means it's worth 200.
I'm sorry?
For selling it for 200 means,
but she's saying, I'll the estate. You, the estate, you owe me 200 zuz. You only gave me 100. You gave me an asset worth, you didn't give me an asset worth 200. She'll say, that's me, that's my skill. I'm a convincing sales lady, but the asset itself is worth 100. You ask people, I'm sorry? No, remember, that's not the case. That's not the case. If the market went up, then it's not a 100, and it's not 100. It's 200. Remember, the whole idea of here, the same way that if she took something that was worth 200 and sold it for 100. So remember, again, that, why do we say you caused yourself a loss? Because here is the value of the item. Remember, there is still a basic value for real estate. Here is the value of the item we gave you. You messed it up. You bear the consequences. Now we gave you an asset for 100. She says, well, thanks to my saleswoman abilities, I sold it for 200. You guys should still be on the hook for another 100. So the Gemara says, Amrav Nachman, Amrav Aravua, Amrav Beis, Khan, Shana Rebbe, Hakol Lebal Hamos. I both say it is here that Rebbe's coming to teach us that whenever you go ahead and I will say, now this is going to get into a very interesting sugya, whenever you go ahead and have some type of gain in an item that was to be sold, that gain goes to the owner of the object. So, meaning, in other words, what the Gemara is saying over here is the Yisumim are considered to be, here's what's very interesting. We'll say when the woman sells that property, woman seizes an asset that's, let's say, worth 100 mana, and she goes ahead and she sells it for 200, very shrewd business lady. Who's the owner of that property? The truth is, it doesn't matter. Or she takes an asset that's worth 200, sells it for 100. Who's the owner of that property? The Yisumim is very important. She's not the owner. Because remember, we'll say, we have to go back to it, but we saw in the previous sugya, it's not clear that she's permitted to seize property for herself. I mean, let's say she says, I don't want to sell it. I don't want to sell it. I want to own real estate. It's not clear that she's permitted to seize it for herself. What she is permitted to do is she's permitted to say, listen, the estate owes me 200 mana. I'm going to sell off property on behalf of the estate. Therefore, Rebbe's coming to teach us that whenever you are acting as a shaliach, so it, and let's say, again, there's some type of additional benefit accrued as a result of the sale, that benefit always goes to the principal. That benefit always goes to the owner of the object that you are currently engaged in selling. Therefore, in this case over here, she takes a piece of property that's worth 100, she's shrewd and she sells it for 200, that profit ultimately goes to the, some goes to the estate. That's Rebbe's position. You should know, this, by the way, this sugya actually has fascinating halachic ramifications. Listen to this. Kidisanya, hosifolo achas yisera. Bosa, listen to this case. Let's say, again, a very simple situation. Reuven tells Shimon, I need you to go out and purchase me an item. Now, we're going to discuss exactly what kind of item he's telling him. So I need you to go out and purchase me an object. Shliach Shimon goes out to go ahead and purchase an object. Then what happens? Instead of getting one for the allotted amount, for the particular amount of money, he what? He gets two. He gets two. Now, of course, the shaila is, who gets the additional object? Who gets the second object? So, sifalo achas yisera. So, if the seller gave the purchaser, the shaliach, an extra object, hakol l'shliach tiri Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds, everything goes to the shaliach. Okay? We'll see what this is. Everything goes to the shaliach. So, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi says, cholkin, no, ultimately we go ahead and we split it between the shaliach and the mishaleach. Look at Rashi. Well, say, actually, I'm sorry, not yet. V'hatanya, we learned, Rabbi Yossi Omer HaKol Balamos. We have another brisa that says, that Rabbi Yossi says that when the shaliach goes out to purchase something for the mishaleach, and he ends up getting an additional item, what? Everything goes to the Balamos. The Balamos is the mishaleach, the principal. So we'll say, so Rabbi Yossi is contradicting himself. Amrai Bar Chama, no, it's not a contradiction. Lo kasha, kan bedavar shiyesh lo kitzva. Kan bedavar she'en lakitz. And I will say this is very interesting. Everything depends on the nature of the object being purchased. What does that mean? Look at Rashi just a moment. She'esh lakitzva. So one case is talking about an item that has a set price. Rashi says, kigon, she'esh lakitzva, kigon, kitnis haninkar bechanos, b'mida malik li bepruta. Let's say, for example, you're going to buy legumes. So everybody knows that the way you buy legumes is a cup of legumes costs a pruta. Costs a pruta. So what happens? Im hosifu achas esira cholkin. Listen to this. So let's say again, Reuven said to Shimon, go buy me a cup of kitnis, of legumes. So we know legumes cost one cup, a pruta for a cup. So the shaliach goes to the merchant, and instead of getting one cup, what happens? The merchant gives him two cups. Rabbi say, now that's called a matana. That's the seller, of the legumes, giving the shaliach a matana. What's the suffix? Why did he give him the matana? Did he give him the matana because he likes the shaliach? Or did he give him the matana because he likes the mishlach? Now the Gemara discusses, in cases where it's clear that, let's say one of the parties has a relationship with the vendor, fine. But let's say, again, you're dealing with a situation where both of the parties have a relationship with the vendor. So the shaila is, who is entitled to that matana? So because we don't know who's entitled to the matana, what does Rabbi Yossi say? They split it. We'll say, obviously, the first cup of kitnis, which Reuven gave money to Shimon to buy, so that belongs to Reuven. But the second cup of kitnis, which is the matana cup, ultimately is split between shaliach and mishaliach. On the other hand, davar she'en lo kitzva, if Reuven asks Shimon to buy him an item that does not have a set price, for example, Rashi says, kegon talis v'chaluk v'yarek, like a garment, and in karim ba'omad, pamim mevater alim kar bezol, pamim b'simtzum, hakola balamo she'in kamatana elamecher. But we'll say, if you have other items that do not have a set price, so if something doesn't have a set price, then what? Then that's not called a matana, that's just called a sale. Because of that, it will be the seller ultimately, again, who gets the full benefit. So I'll say this is quite fascinating. So the Gemara is making a distinction over here. Well, let's say, again, Reuven tells Shimon to go out and buy me X, and Shimon comes back with X plus Y. He comes back with something additional. Who gets the additional amount? To which the Gemara now is suggesting that it depends. If it's a matana, and how do you define a matana? By something that has a set price, and yet the seller is giving the shaliach something additional, then we don't know who gets the matana, and that matana ultimately is split between shaliach and mishaliach. On the other hand, again, if it's an item whose price fluctuates, therefore it's not called the matana, rather ultimately, again, it's just called a good deal, and a good deal, again, the benefit of the good deal fully accrues ultimately to the mishaliach, to the person who owes the money. Therefore, Rabbi said, the Gemara is suggesting over here, Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa says, Hilchasa, davar sheyesh lo kitzva cholkin, davar she'ein lo kitzva kol balamos. So we'll say, and Rav Papa says this explicitly, what is the halacha? An item that has a set price, if the seller gives the shaliach something additional, that is split between shaliach and mishaliach, but since it does not have a set price, all of the benefit accrues to the balamos. My kamashna. So we'll say, so why does Rav Papa have to say this? We just said this. What he's saying is, he's saying that the way we just tried to resolve the machlokis and the brises is in fact a good machlokis. So we'll say, the Gemara is actually codifying this halacha lemaisa. Therefore, we'll say, again, remember, in this, the reason why the Gemara is bringing this up is because lemaisa, if she takes that property, and she, if she takes that property that was worth 100 zuz, and what? She sells it for 200 zuz, now we understand why lemaisa, that additional amount goes to the yisum, because she is the shaliach, and ultimately, again, with the davar she'ein la kitzva, which is what land is. Land does not have a set price. Therefore, any additional money is accrued will always go to who? To the mishaliach, to the balamos, and therefore the additional amounts go back to the yisumim. Vaitri bai lahu. So the Gemara asks the kasha. So we'll say now we're getting into these cases of additional shlichos, of changing of terms of shlichos. This is interesting. So we'll say, listen to this. Let's say the mishaliach, I'll call him, the principal. The principal says to the shaliach, go ahead and sell a liska. Liska, both sides, is a half a core. So I say to Ruvain, go sell a half a core of my property. I want you to go sell a half a core of my property. And what happens? V'zaven le'kura. And the shaliach sells a full core. So instead of selling half, he sells twice the amount I told him to sell. So my, what's the halacha? Mosif al devarafu v'liska miyakani. Al dilma ma'avir al devarafu v'liska namilokani. But also listen to this interesting chakira. So I tell Ruvain to sell a half a core of land. Ruvain sells a full core. So how do we look at this sale? Do we say, well, look, the truth is, for the first half a core that he was sold, he was selling in accordance with my directions. Therefore, that sale will stand. But for the additional core that he was not entitled to, meaning he's not entitled to sell that property, he was not commissioned to sell that property. Therefore, again, that sale is batal. Or do we say what? That once a shaliach changes the terms of his shlichus, the agency for which he was appointed, then the whole agency is voided, even the sale of the first half of core land. You hear that question? So remember, this case is most easily illustrated where the shliach sells two fields. So do we say, well, the first field represents his agency, and the second field represents, again, something additional that he wasn't commissioned to do. So everybody will agree that the second field will be bottle, but the first field stands. Do we say, no, once, I'm sorry?
Sold it to different people.
Or it could even be the same person, as long as they're two different fields. But the question of, or do we say, no, once you change the circumstances, the details of your shalichus, you're done. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yaakov minar pekod mishmid Rav Yena Tashma, Amar balabayis l'shlucho. Listen to this. If the balabayis said to the shaliach, Tein lohen chaticha l'archin, give my guests a piece of meat. V'hu omer t'lushtayim. And the shaliach says to the guests, you could each take two pieces of meat. And what happens? V'hei not lu shalosh. And the guests took three. Now, both said, now, what's the chap of this case? And at the end, they found out, by the way, that the meat was hekdish. Right? The meat was sacrificial meat. So what happens? Both said, so what's that lach? Kulan malu. Everyone committed mi'ila. So says the Gemara, I amrit bishlama mosif al devarav havi mishum hachi balabayis mal. So I'll say, if you say, now remember, here in this case, so the balabas said, give my guest one piece of meat. The shaliach went ahead and of his own volition said to the guests, what? You know what? It's on me. Take two. Right? Take two pieces of meat. So I'll say, if you say that lemaisa, even though the shaliach added on a part that he was not permitted to do, but nevertheless, Nevertheless, Mosif al Devarav Havi. We'll say, we consider the first piece of meat to be a shlichus, and the second piece of meat was to be the shaliach's own thing, which again is batal. So therefore, that's the case, Mishum Hachi Balabayis Mal. Then I understand why the Balabayis committed Mi'ilah, or we'll say, why? Because at the end of the day, the shaliach, we'll say, I just tell you something interesting. Even though normally we say ein shliach l'dvar avera, right? There's no such thing as an agency for the commission of a sin. Mi'ila is the exception. That if you tell someone to go ahead and if you tell someone to do something on your behalf and it results in an act of mi'ila, you the shaliach, you the mishaleach, the sender, right? The principal are still chai vezal. So also listen to this. So therefore, in this case over here, I'm telling shaliach, go ahead and give the guest a piece of meat. Shliach gives the guest two. Now, and the guests eat three. So the bride said, everybody committed mi'ila. So the only way I commit mi'ila is how? Is if that agent is acting on my behalf. So what do you see from here? Now, the agent added on an additional piece of meat, and yet it still says mechayev in mi'ila, which tells me what? That even when the agent changes the terms of his agency, for the part that I appointed him for, that part is still my agent for. It's just for the additional part, for the most of the whole stuff, for the additional part, that's the part for which he's not acting as my agent. Eli amrit ma'avir al dvarav havi. But if you want to say that when he changes the terms of the agency, the entire agency is void, and therefore he's not acting as my shaliach. Therefore, if that's the case, balabayis amai ma'al, then why would the balabayis have committed mi'ila? The hatnan we learned, ha-shaliach sha'asa shlichuso, that if the shliach does his shlichus, balabayis ma'al. Rabbi says, remember, if the shaliach does exactly what the mishaliach told him to do, then yeshleach l'dvar avira b'mi'ila, and therefore the mishaliach will have committed mi'ila. However, again, lo asa shlichuso, but again, if the shaliach deviated from what he was asked to do, then what? Shliach ma'al. Then the shliach committed mi'ila, but what? The mishaliach did not. Hacham asking, and what's the case over here? The amr lehu, where the shaliach said to the guests, Tilu achas midaito shabalavayis, v'achas midati. So I'll say, in this case over here, the shaliach is quite explicit in saying what? Go ahead, take a piece of meat, that's in the balabayis. The other one, that's on me. Right? It's very easy to be generous with other people's stuff. Right? They have that second meat, that's on me. V'shaklo inutlas, and the guest went ahead and took it there. So we'll say, in this case, the shaliach himself is explicitly articulating the what? I'm going to give you the first piece of meat. That's my shlichus. That's my shlichus. Then the second piece of meat, that's not my shlichus. Right? That's me giving to you. So in that case, everyone will agree that what? That even though he's adding on, that first piece of meat still represents his shlichus. Tashma, haisak suvasamana, umachra shavamana medir. So I'll say again, so what you see coming out from here is that lemaisa, it appears that whenever, we're still trying to figure out that when a shaliach goes ahead and deviates from the terms of a shlichus and adds on, does something additional that he was not originally commissioned or entitled to do. So the question is, do we still say that the first part of the shlichus that he was commissioned to do stands and the additional part is voided? Or do we say, no, once you change the terms of your shlichus, you're totally done, the entire shlichus is void. We'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up at the Tashma, Emir Tzashem.